start again. Don't hurry.
The Discourse of Two Once Young Women by Jane Beeson, with Lynn Farley as Daisy, Eleanor Bron as Ida, and Oliver Ford Davies as Gerald.
Hello?
Do you know who it is?
No, I don't think so.
Guess.
I can't. No, I can't.
Gerald. Gerald Santa. Remember?
Gerald? No, I don't believe
I'm on my way to Cornwall. Thought I'd call in on you.
Today?
If that's convenient. I'm just outside Avebury. Must have been there, seen all those stones.
Yes, of course.
I'll be with you at 4:00. Tea time. Is that convenient?
Yes. He arrived at 2:15. I met him coming down our farm's drive.
Gerald! I thought you'd ring for directions. How did you find the way?
I use my map.
Of course. I should have known. This was no ordinary person. This was the Gerald I'd been at school with as a child in the war. I was 11 and a day girl. He was 9 and a boarder, with 19 other Jewish refugee children evacuated to Devon. And even at 9, Gerald was alarmingly clever. Come round on the terrace. You can admire the wisteria while I get us tea. Are you alone?
I am. I prefer driving alone.
What made you look me up? Find me after all these years?
I heard you playing on the radio some years back. Rather enjoyed it. I meant to look you up then, but all this and that happened. I've kept in touch with quite a few of the others.
Have you? I don't know of anyone. When you're a child, you don't bother, and when you're an adult, it seems too late, too far back.
I can fill you in on one or two who were at our school at the same time as yourself.
I'll get us tea first. From London down here, it's quite a drive. Milk?
No, but I'll have a slice of lemon if you've got one.
In the saucer behind the teapot.
You haven't got a fork, I suppose. Never mind, I'll use my fingers.
Are you sure? I can get a fork.
All done. Too late now.
I've got a cake, at least. I think I've got a cake. I'll fetch it.
No, I never eat cake.
Tell me about yourself. Everyone you've kept in touch with.
Oh, I lunched with Becca. You remember Becca? You must do. Her husband's sheriff of the City of London. They have a magnificent place in Dorset. They've made it themselves. Gardens, fountains, rare shrubs. You should go over there. See it. It's an easy enough drive.
But I was only half listening. In my mind, the years had dropped away. I was back among the wild garlic beside the river. Only it was Ida I was with, not Becca. I was 12, Ida 10. Dark-haired, pale-faced, with big grey-green eyes. Lids as clearly defined as those in medieval paintings. I could see her now like yesterday.
I'll tell Becca I've seen you. She'll want to show you round Mandalay. They've called it after Rebecca. Not my sort of book, but there you go.
Must be by the sea.
Oh, yes, it's by the sea. Immense cliffs. They've got an old machine gun post on the top where they go to watch the birds.
Have you kept in touch with Ida?
I did. I haven't heard anything of her recently, not for a few years. She used to be an actress, you know. She was very successful for a while, then gave it up. I'm not sure what she's doing now.
Where is she living?
London, somewhere, I believe.
You don't have her address?
No, but I could get it for you. She has a very different lifestyle to yours.
What like?
She's separated from her husband. Has a child.
Just one?
I think it was just the one. A girl. Grown up now, of course. When I last heard, she was going to do a course in media studies, or one of those things they read these days.
Is she like Ida? I mean, was she like Ida as a child?
Not at all. Absolutely no comparison. Ida was an unusual child. Moody, difficult. Oh, wasn't she difficult? I remember on many occasions our poor principal carrying her upstairs and shutting her in her room. You must remember that.
I was again transported back to those long, hot summer days of childhood. In a child's memory, the sun always shines, and there are daisies to pick. Our school lawn led to a terrace with steps and more lawn leading to the river, clear and fast running with pebble bed and boulders.
Is there anything left in the teapot?
Oh, sorry, of course. Perhaps I ought to fill it up.
No, that will do nicely. I like the way you make it in a proper pot. I don't like those bags everyone uses these days.
Actually, it's bags in the pot. Biscuit?
No, thank you. I was given a very good lunch. If you've got an address book, or just a notebook will do, I'll write down Becca's address. I'll see her on the way back. Tell her you're going to contact her.
I knew Ida much better. We were very close, about as close as children can get.
Yes, but I doubt you'd recognise Ida now.
Why?
She's changed a lot, much more than you. But I'll get her address, send it to you.
Or a telephone number. You could give her mine.
I don't think she'll contact you. You'll have to do it.
Would she want me to?
She's always been a bit in awe of you. You were the older. A couple of years makes a lot of difference when you're a child.
Has she remarried?
I don't think she's with anyone at present, but as I said, I haven't seen her for several years. She's had several partners. She remembers your violin playing, too. You don't give recitals anymore?
No, I stopped all that years ago. I just play now for my own amusement.
A pity. That's depriving the rest of us. If you're fortunate enough to have a gift, you must never bury it.
Our conversation shifted. Gerald told me about himself and a few others we mutually remembered, but I only half concentrated. My mind was on Ida. Would I actually contact her? Even if I had her number? She might not remember me. I felt sure she would.
I won't come in on the way back, but I'll keep in touch. Tell Ida I've seen you, if I can trace her, that is.
Yes, please. I should love to see Ida again. I half listened as we walked to the car. It all seemed so strange. So remarkable to be walking beside this man I hadn't seen for virtually 50 years, since he was a schoolboy and had never expected to see again. The Victorian schoolhouse came up before my eyes as vividly as yesterday. I could even smell the tall grasses, see the red bark of the row of macrocarpus, even their cones. I felt elated in a strange way. To have heard news of Ida after all this time, that she was alive and living in London, was momentous. I'd never dreamt it could happen. I'd expected her to be alive, but in Europe somewhere. Her mother was German, her father Jewish. They were divorced, which in those days had still carried with it slight disapproval. What exactly approved of parents were like, I wasn't too sure. I imagined my own fighting, but together. It had been quite gradual, my relationship with Ida. At first I hardly noticed her. She was just one of the young ones. Then a friend I'd had left, and I began to notice Ida. She grew on me. It was as simple as that. And the more I saw her, the more I wanted to see her. Not so much to talk, but just to watch her. I suppose it was rather odd to have a fixation on someone so early in life.
Hello?
Ida?
Yes.
It's Gerald.
I know.
Do you want to see me? I'm quite near you.
It's been a long time.
I've been lecturing abroad.
How soon?
In a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes.
I have to work this afternoon.
Work?
Yes, I've got a part. Only a small part, but it's a good company. I liked the script.
You can show it to me. I'll be with you shortly.
Guess who I found the other day?
I can't. Who?
Daisy Randall. You remember her, you must.
Yes, of course.
She's living in North Devon, but she comes to London from time to time.
No, Gerald. I've told you before, I don't want to meet any of your finds.
In any case, I'm moving.
Again? Really? Where to?
Bath, probably. Or Swindon.
Swindon? Why Swindon?
Tom's found a flat near his.
Tom. I thought all that was over.
He's helping me, that's all.
Is it his production?
What if it is? He still auditions.
Ida, why don't you let all this go? Forget it. Get on with your proper teaching work.
Acting is my proper work, as you put it. I'm trained. So you've prized out Daisy.
I called in on her on my way down, after Becca.
Perfect Becca.
She's a very nice girl.
A girl of 59?
She hasn't aged unduly.
Like me.
That's not what I said.
Tell me about Daisy, if that's what you want.
She wants to meet you.
Gerald, you know I don't like meeting these people you keep fishing up from the past.
I'd have thought you'd want to meet Daisy.
She wouldn't recognise me.
Well, it wouldn't matter. She would know you.
You mean you agree? She wouldn't recognise me.
I never said that.
It's what you meant.
It's not what I meant, Ida. It's the meaning you've read into it. Of course, it's possible she wouldn't, but why should that matter her if she doesn't?
Because it does. Of course it does.
Both of you are no longer young. How you look is surely not important.
I think it is. I know it is.
Ida, you're not talking sense. You look a perfectly normal, older woman.
I come up against it every day. See it in people's eyes. Or rather, I don't, because I don't even get a second glance.
That's age, my dear. It comes to us all.
It's not just age, Gerald. I know what I'm talking about. I've changed a lot.
How, if you feel so strongly, you could have that Botox treatment they all have now. It's all over the television. Or something of the sort.
I could not. I can't bear pain, and I can't afford it.
I can see it's a problem for you in the acting business, but it happens to all the women I know who act.
But not the men.
Less so. You're still beautiful, Ida, to me.
I've got eyes. I can see.
Look, give me a photo, any you happen to have, and I'll show it to Daisy.
No.
Ida. Oh, Ida. She's given up her recitals.
No. Why?
Perhaps you could find that out. I couldn't. Oh, it's getting late. I'll have to go, or I won't be home before dark. I'm no longer happy driving at night.
I understood Daisy. I thought I could guess what made her give up. My relationship with her had been instinctual, almost like an animal's. I was drawn to Daisy because she had a pony and was brilliant at the violin. In childhood, you don't inquire or consider. You either take to someone or you don't. Daisy took to me, and I responded. It was a primitive sort of love, even a passion. But passion can blow out like candles on a cake. I wanted to see her now, but I didn't want her to see me. Yet I knew that Daisy wouldn't let it go. I felt its inevitability and panicked.
I didn't hear from Gerald again for some time. Then one morning...
Hello, Daisy.
Who is it?
Don't you know?
Yes, of course. Gerald.
Well done. I've got Ida's new address. She's moving again, nearer you.
Where?
Swindon.
Swindon?
Exactly. That's what I asked her. You're not surprised, eh?
No, I was just thinking it's curious we're all quite close.
Oh, not by the law of averages. People on the whole disperse very little, like to return to their roots.
I've always thought Ida was particularly rootless. Her parents seem to be in London, or...
Whereas they were, in fact, in a Nazi prison camp under the illusion of one day being...
And while Gerald's voice went on describing the camps, about which we were kept in total ignorance at the time... Out of the depths of memory, a clip like that of a film ran before my eyes. I can't remember exactly where our conversation took place, but I've never forgotten Ida's words.
Do you like your mother?
Yes, but she's rather shouty with me. Most of my friends are afraid of her.
When my father takes me home after I've been out with him, my mother won't open the door. She won't even open the window. She hides.
So what do you do?
Wait. When she hears my father's car drive off, she comes down and opens the door.
Won't she even wave out the window?
No, she'll never even open the window.
Who do you like best, your mother or your father?
I don't know. Sometimes one, sometimes the other.
Where's your home?
Here.
You mean you never go home? Where does your mother live?
My mother's in London, I think, though I don't know for sure. I don't know where my father is. I think he's in Germany.
This exchange had imprinted itself on my brain. It amazed me that her mother couldn't even wave from a window, that both her parents had gone away without taking Ida, and the school was her home. But that was wartime for you, and no one asked a reason for anything. We just accepted what we were told. How innocent and ignorant I was. But now, looking back, it explained a lot about Ida, and I imagined had to do with her moodiness and our principal being so patient with her. None of the children talked much about their parents. They wrote them letters, but never seemed to get one back. I knew instinctively I shouldn't ask about it. It had a feeling of privacy, a darkness, like the keep out signs I'd grown up with in Surrey. Then evacuated, and in spite of sunlight and open fields, it was the war, with this sense of things lurking, unexplained. We seemed to be floating on the water-lilied surface of a black and bottomless lake.
That's what she told me. She's got a teaching job in Swindon and found an apartment. Have you got a bit of paper and pencil? Ready?
Yes.
Ida Salinger, 103 Belmont Road, Swindon. It's her stage name, but she likes it used in preference to her own.
Thanks, Gerald. I'll try to arrange a meeting.
Do you want me to repeat it?
No, no, I've got it.
I've got a meeting. Goodbye. I'll be down again before too long.
Gerald wasn't one to prolong a long-distance call. I kept the piece of paper with Ida's address, but perversely couldn't bring myself to write. I just didn't do it. Then one day, on impulse, I pulled a piece of paper in front of me and began writing.
Dear Ida, Gerald Santa came to see me for the first time for 50 years last spring. Now he's rung me with your address. I would love to meet you if you could bear to meet me, that is. It's all so long ago, that amazing school and the war. But I can remember it like yesterday. Actually better. Let me know what you think and if you would consider a rendezvous. Regards, Daisy Randall.
Just so many words, conveying nothing of what I felt, what she meant to me, or had meant. What scared me, and no doubt would her, was the gap, the years between. Both of us old. It was the following year, almost exactly, when Gerald rang again, from a short distance off. I invited him for lunch, which he accepted. I presumed Becca to be away.
I had a very good run down, only 4 hours. Spring, it must be the spring, before the tourists get on the roads. Yeah, smells nice, fresh. I like your old house. Well, I couldn't live in one myself. I like to be warm. Can't stand drafts, creepy crawlies and all that.
I prefer not to have to scoop a spider out of the bath before I get in it. We'll go round to the terrace. I thought we'd have lunch outside.
I can't stay long, as I have an appointment at 2.
Actually, I'm quite busy myself.
But I'll be happy to meet your husband if he's home soon.
Oh, that sounds like Richard now. Gerald had the capacity to make one feel he was doing a favour if he accepted the offer of lunch. We were rather a stilted trio, as Richard and Gerald had absolutely nothing in common. And with Richard present, he didn't ask about Ida and myself, till he and I were alone afterwards, drinking coffee.
You haven't written to Ida?
I have.
She said she hadn't heard from you.
I sent her to the address you gave me.
Perhaps she'd already moved again. She never stays anywhere long. I'll find her new number.
Or her mobile. She's bound to have one.
Yes, it's here. Got your pen?
Yes. I'm sure Ida got my letter, but probably didn't want to make contact.
Oh, no. She's anxious to meet you. I told her about your place here.
Place? House, rather.
She's messing about with one of her theatre contacts. Got some small part. Touring. touring at her age. She's mad.
I took down the new number. We talked a little longer till Gerald left. Somehow it seemed in keeping with her that she was elusive, hard to get. So I wrote again.
Dear Ida, Gerald tells me my first letter never reached you, so I'm writing this one. I'm coming in your direction to see friends in Bath. Perhaps we could meet. If you would like to, of course, and if you have the time. I could come to your house in Swindon, if that would be easiest for you. Yours, Daisy.
I got a prompt letter back. Dear Daisy, I would like to meet you, but would prefer it to be on no woman's land. Could it be inside the Roman baths, Ida? I wrote.
Dear Ida, it was amazing to get your letter, hear from you after all these years. Yes, the Roman baths would be fine. I have a dark purple scarf I could wear if you could wear something specific too, so we will recognise each other. I can hardly believe it possible we shall really meet each other again. Like a dream come true. Love, Daisy. I wanted, even longed, to see Daisy again, but what for? Why, and to what purpose? Our other lives would lie uneasily between us. Our age. I wasn't sure if I could face it. I've changed, and she sounds just the same.
That night I dreamt about Ida. I dreamt we met as adults, and she had changed. Not so much in appearance, because I recognised her easily. It was her voice that was hard. I felt dull beside her. But then perhaps I had always felt dull beside her. She was so, well, perfect. And I was just ordinary. In my dream, she was over-made up and her voice was loud. I didn't even dare try to speak to her. She seemed so busy, so popular. Then I woke and Ida was back before my eyes as she really was. I mean, had been. Ida, kneeling on the bench on the terrace outside the schoolhouse. As I watched, she looked up, saw me looking, turned her back, shut me out, bent lower over her tracing. The next moment she was balling up the paper in her fist, throwing it on the floor, slithering off the bench and running in through the French doors. I felt shocked, yet I suffered for her. I shut myself in the music room and played until my eyes started shutting with tiredness. Those were the bad days. On the good days, we'd be sent down among the cabbages in the vegetable garden to pick cabbage white caterpillars off the undersides of the leaves, squash them between our fingers and thumbs, watch the green juice run out from what was left of the pale, stripped skeleton leaves. Furtively, we'd give up our murderous toil and steal down to the river's edge. Ida used to paddle out to crouch on a rock, pleated skirt pulled up, bony knees bent, looking into the pool for trout, her hair curtaining her face. And as I sat there watching her, I had almost what I wanted, Ida and the river. If I could just have looked like her, there would have been nothing else for me to desire. I wanted to be like her so much. Now, looking back, I suppose it was an extraordinarily obsessive child love, unusual in my being the older. I didn't expect, couldn't imagine, my obsession for Ida being returned.
In the autumn term, Daisy didn't come back.
Where's Daisy?
She's gone to her new school, a boarding school. The clever girl gained a music scholarship.
Can I go too?
I've asked, but your aunt says no. It's expensive and she's unable to afford it.
My aunt? Why not my mother? She's in London.
My dear child, don't think we haven't tried, but our letters are not reaching her.
I'll write to my mother.
We have to make a decision right away, Ida, and I can see no further means of contacting her in time.
I could go next term. I won't stay here if you don't let me go with Daisy. I hate you. I hate all of you. I want to go with Daisy.
I meant it too. I would run away. But where to? I waited till everyone was in bed, then stole out. There was a huge moon and stars. It felt better outside. I found a place, a shelf of cement. under the bridge over the river. It was quite cold and I was shivering, but feeling like that made me less miserable inside. I never knew before how long nights took. It went on and on. In the morning, I heard them searching for ages before they found me, talking in anxious, worried voices.
I came home from my boarding school at half term, and my mother took me back to visit the refugee school. Apparently, our teacher wanted to see me.
Come in. How nice to see you, Daisy. But she's put on weight.
A bit fatter, on the puffy side, but then she was always skinny before.
Where's Ida?
She's left. She's gone to live in Hackney with her aunt.
I felt quite relieved. I'd been desperate to see her, but not if I looked fat and puffy. Ida wouldn't like me, I knew.
Ida made a terrible scene when Daisy left. She wouldn't even eat. Eventually, her aunt decided to take her to London with her. Of course, I miss her. She was a very talented child and most unusual, but difficult. So extraordinarily difficult. And the situation looks very bad now for the poor child. Both her parents over in Germany.
But is it safe for her in London with the bombing?
We only hope so. We hated to see her go. Such a frail child.
I was even more glad Ida couldn't see me. It was clear no one could love me as I was now. But my heart leapt with pleasure at the thought Ida had missed me, properly missed me. That meant everything to me. So odd and egotistic is obsession that I thought little of her suffering. And somehow that was the end of it, the end of my ever expecting to see Ida again. Until, that is, Gerald's voice came over the phone 18 months ago. And now, for the third time.
Daisy? You know who it is?
Of course. Where are you?
Just leaving Tiverton. How long will it take me to get to you?
Oh, about an hour.
It's all right, is it, if I call in?
Of course.
I've got Ida's mobile number for you. Did you hear?
Yes. But, Gerald, I tried before and it didn't work. You know it didn't, I told you.
I think it will this time. She seems a lot better.
Better?
More balanced. I can't talk any longer now. Be with you soon. I've got some friends with me. But if you like, I could drop them off for a cream tea. Come on to you alone.
Friends are staying here, too. Sound your horn just a couple of times outside the gate, and we'll go up on the hill. Talk there.
It's a magnificent view. I hope the car won't get stuck. The ground's very soft.
It's good to see you.
And you, even if you are behaving like a truant schoolgirl.
I needed to talk to you alone. About Ida. She's agreed to meet me, more or less.
Oh, that surprises me. She's very resistant. She's of the opinion that she's changed out of all recognition.
And has she?
It's hard for me to tell.
Anyway, I don't care.
You don't?
We've all changed. How could we not?
No, indeed. If you do succeed, I hope it'll go well. Oh, she may have her daughter with her. I learned who the father is, a much younger man than herself.
What's her child called?
Sabina. Sabby, Ida calls her. She's at Sussex University, about to take a gap year. Go right away somewhere, I'm told.
So Ida's not alone?
Oh, no, Ida's never alone. I think you should go ahead and see her. She's at home now, got a sensible job working with children. You should get her in the evenings. I know she really wants to meet you, but is nervous. Nervous she won't meet your expectations.
Did she say so?
No, but I know her well enough to know it's partly that.
And what's the other part?
See her. That's much the best you can do.
As usual, he didn't stay long, but left me with Ida's mobile number as promised. I sat staring at it, wondering what to do. Should I try now? It was 6 p.m. Gerald had said between 6 and 8 was a good time. Full of trepidation, I pressed the digits.
Hello?
Is that Ida?
Yes.
Is Daisy? Daisy Randall. Is it all right to talk now?
Later would be better. I'm still at work.
Oh, I'm sorry.
After about 7:30, I'll be home.
But she wasn't. For a long time, almost 6 months, I should think, I did nothing, let it slip. I don't know quite why, but something in me was afraid. Afraid to break the spell, the preciousness of the past, with now. Then one evening, on impulse, I wrote.
Dear Ida, I'm sorry we didn't manage to make contact a while back, but I'll be seeing friends of mine in Bath on Thursday week, May the 4th. Could we meet at the Roman Baths, do you think, as you originally suggested? Yours, Daisy.
I got a letter by return. Dear Daisy, it would be better at the station. I'll stand by the main and only exit, just inside the door. Wear your purple scarf. I'll be wearing a dark red skirt. I'll have my car. Somehow I hadn't imagined Ida would have a car. It was the way Gerald had talked about her. Neither could I imagine our meeting, but I was excited. So long ago. To oneself, one doesn't change, hardly at all. The feelings of childhood are the same when you're old. It is the outer skin that changes so drastically. And in childhood, the personality is mostly concealed, and character, so-called, only reveals itself under the pressure of events. I wrote back.
Dear Ida, I'm so delighted. I can't tell you how wonderful it will be for me to be with you again, even if only for a brief time. I know you're working and won't stay long, but if we could steal 1 hour, that's all I'd ask. Yours, Daisy.
Then suddenly and spontaneously, I felt compelled to write to Ida, tell her a little more what to expect. I wrote,
Dear Ida, you may think it strange to get this letter after we have arranged to meet, but I felt it unfair to ask you to meet someone you know so little about. I, after all, was 2 years older than you when we were at school together, and that makes a big difference. You were still a child, albeit a highly intelligent and perceptive one, while I was semi-adult at 12 going on 13. I'm not quite sure what to tell you, but perhaps a little about my life, which compared to yours has been very plebeian. First I did the odd recital, it's true, but all that was years ago. I've done little since except sit in one place with the same person. Comforting, but hardly enterprising. Whereas you have braved life full on by going into acting and being prepared to risk yourself before an audience. I can't say how much I admire you for it, and can remember even as a child you had an unusual talent in those small plays we used to do. You were Ruth, I remember, and I was Naomi. I had no idea of acting. I was just myself. I didn't seem to have any imagination outside myself. Perhaps that is my failing.
I rang her again. Almost to my surprise, she answered.
Hi, Daisy.
I can't wait for the 5th, our meeting. Is it still all right for you? I can't quite believe it will actually happen. I shall be there with my purple scarf. Whatever happens, I promise you.
I will too. Unless...
Oh, don't say unless. Please, Ida, please be there. Ida? Are you there?
Yes, I was reaching for my diary.
That date's all right, isn't it? The one we've agreed? I hope there won't be a crowd. Masses of tourists.
Not if we meet as planned at 10. Is that too early for you? I'm much nearer than you, if you like.
No, that's all right. I can manage any time. I just can't wait.
Hello, is that Daisy Randall?
Yes. Is that you, Gerald?
I'm afraid it's not, and that I've some sad news to impart. I'm Matt, Gerald's brother. Gerald died yesterday. A heart attack. Quite painlessly, the doctor says, in his sleep.
Oh, no. Oh, I am sorry. Poor Gerald. He wasn't even old, not really old.
I know that relatively recently he's called in on you a few times. He's never forgotten you. As you must know, he was always very fond of you. I'll notify you as soon as we have a date for the funeral.
Will he be in London?
No, down here in Surrey.
What a dreadful shock for you, Matt. It's so unexpected. I had no idea.
None of us had. I don't think he told anyone that his heart was dicey.
Poor man. I can hardly believe it. He seems so well, even young.
Yes.
Does Ida know? Ida Hurst?
Oh, I tried to ring her, but I couldn't get through.
I'll contact her, if that will help.
No, I think I should. She's never been here. She'll need directions.
If you're sure you'd prefer to?
Yes. Yes, of course.
Only I'm sure she won't mind if you want to keep it as a sort of family affair. That applies to me too.
Oh, no, no. Please come. I'll ask Ida.
Oh, Matt, I'm so, so sorry. Such a shock, such a terrible shock for you, above all.
Well, we weren't close, but a brother's a brother.
I was shocked. I'd known Gerald since school, and he was a year younger than me. I was close to him. He knew about me and still liked me. But I didn't want to go to his funeral. I wanted to sulk and not speak, behave as a child again. I hate funerals. I don't see why relatives feel forced to have them. They make me feel sick and disgusted. What a way to meet Daisy at poor Gerald's funeral. It's like a frightening dream. Poor, poor Gerald.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
How are you, Daisy? It's good of you to come.
I wanted to.
You've seen Becca?
Is that her over there, next to the tall man in black?
But Matt had moved off. Someone was plucking his sleeve. I continued to look around for Ida. What was so frustrating was that I probably wouldn't know her if I saw her. Gerald had said she was a lot different to herself as a child. I looked to Matt for help, but it was difficult because he was host and busy organising everyone. Eventually, in desperation, I grabbed his elbow.
Matt, is Ida here? Could you spare a moment to point her out to me?
Ida? Ida Hurst?
Yes, we were to have met before, but...
You know, I'm not sure I'd recognise her. Gerald was the one to keep up with everyone. I know Becca, of course.
Oh, don't worry, I'll probably be able to find her.
But already some were beginning to go. Then on the edge of the trees, at the far side of the grave, I saw someone who was looking straight at me. The moment she met my eyes, she pulled her wide-brimmed hat down so low I could only see the lower part of her face.
Daisy, apparently that's Ida over there on the edge of the trees. I hope you'll both stay for tea afterwards at my house.
The one in the dark red skirt?
Yes, in the big hat. I think it's going to rain. I felt a couple of drops.
I wasn't listening. I was looking at Ida. I moved closer to my side of the grave, looked across. I thought I was wrong. Looked round for Matt to confirm it was Ida.
Daisy. I knew her at once. She hadn't changed. I'd have known her anywhere. Not because she looked as she used to, but because she was different to the others. My heart gave one of those jolts you can physically feel. Or perhaps not my heart, but some part of me that operated involuntarily and free of my direction. I met her eyes for an instant before I could pull my hat down to shield my own. I couldn't bear her to recognise me, because I knew she would be disappointed. However much she tried to hide it, I knew she would look at me the way people look when they're disappointed. They look and look away.
Certain it was Ida. I had to reach her before she left. I looked across, saw her move back into the trees. She couldn't have seen me. Or if she had, not recognised me.
Excuse me, could I pass? There's someone on the other side I need to see. I'm so sorry. She doesn't know I'm here, you see, and she's going.
Of course. There's quite a crowd here. I'm sure I ought to know you.
I'll be back.
In fact, I'm sure we have met, albeit many years ago.
I'm sorry, but I just have to catch someone I know before she leaves. Excuse me, please. Excuse me. Could I just get through?
That doesn't say much for my sex appeal, does it? But that woman over there, the one I got the impression our friend was in a hurry to see, is Ida Hurst. She had quite a reputation when she was younger.
Really? As an actor?
No, not as an actor.
I'd heard him, and I hated him. I reached the edge of the trees that backed the churchyard. I noticed at the bottom corner there was a gate leading to a playground, and beyond that, the car park. I almost ran down to the gate, heedless of what people might think. There were only a few people left on this side of the grave. Most were making for Gerald's.
Daisy?
Oh, Matt, I'm still trying to catch Ida before she leaves.
I'm sorry, but there's been a lot to do. Organise. Gerald was very much respected, you know. Had many distinguished friends. Most of them here, as you've probably noticed.
I haven't even spoken to Ida, Matt. I couldn't get round the grave. Where is she?
I haven't seen her since I pointed her out to you before.
She couldn't have gone, could she?
Well, if she has, she'd have had to leave from the car park.
Where is it?
Out through the gate in the corner, across the bottom of the playground and through the laurel hedge. But there's someone I'd like you to meet before you go.
Ahead of me, across the grass of the playground, was a woman making for the car park. It was raining quite steadily by now, and she'd put on a loose, billowing waterproof coat.
Ida! Ida, wait! Ida, don't go! Don't go!
So she didn't want to meet me. She must have seen me. She must have.
Ida!
Perhaps she didn't recognise me. But I'd seen her. Seen her profile as she drove away. Her hat was off and her beautiful dark hair was cropped short all over her head. And grey. Then I'm grey.
When Gerald first gave me Daisy's number, said he'd seen her, I couldn't believe him. I wanted to see her so much I couldn't sleep at nights for thinking about it. I was certain she wouldn't have changed, but I didn't want her to see me. I decided I couldn't ring or see her. Yet when she rang, my desire took over, and I heard myself agreeing, even suggesting the Roman baths. It seemed an evocative place to meet, its history stretching back into the ancient past. In the early mornings, the water lies there silently steaming before the crowds come. I planned we'd meet beside the main pool, but all the time I knew it was a dream I could never visualize actually happening. Then Gerald died. It was such a shock. I didn't want to go to his funeral. I hate funerals. Why can't we just be burned or buried alone, like most of us have lived? But I thought perhaps I'd get a glimpse of Daisy. That was all I needed, a glimpse. And I got it. And all the old passion of our childhood came back in a surge of feeling I thought gone forever. It was so intense I ran away. I'd have known her anywhere. Daisy. Daisy Randall.
The Discourse of Two Once Young Women was written by Jane Beeson. Ida was played by Eleanor Bron, Daisy by Lynn Farley, and Gerald by Oliver Ford Davies. Matt and the teacher were played by Jeffrey Beavers, Young Daisy by Anna Lanyon, Young Ida by Tessa Montague, and the mother by Ella Smith. The violin was played by Tessa Montague. The play was directed by Cherry Cookson.